gives it to Thompson. Underneath is Boudreau, lays it up and in! The bucket counts and a foul! Boudreau gives Beloit the lead again! 19 for the Sop. Free throw, Brecken up and good! Her second three-point play of the game. She has a career-high 20. Files is going to face guard McClure the best she can. Shoop can slash. Weatherman's an outside shooter. Man-to-man full court by Beloit. Minneapolis going left to right. They get it into Shoop. Oh, cutting the hoop is McClure all the way down the floor. Lays it up and in at the buzzer, and Beloit loses in overtime. Minneapolis had the perfect play with 4 seconds remaining.
And that's how it ended last night. As you could have heard that game on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com or on the free KD Country 94 app, or you could have watched it on live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. It was the Minneapolis Lions. The girls move on as they knock off Beloit in the first round of three. Substate play last night, 44-42 in overtime at the buzzer. More on that coming up in just a moment. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Other Substate scores from last night in that Riley County Substate. Minneapolis will move on to take on the number one team in the state, who's outscoring the opposition by 33 points per game this year. Silver Lake 21-0 as they took care of Marysville last night, 74-48. And St. Mary's, I mentioned yesterday that I thought that would be a tough game for Nemaw Central despite being the higher seed, and it was. St. Mary's beat Nemaw Central 36-29. Nemaw Central was 18-2. And losing the first round of Substate. Rossville knocks off Riley County 38-28. So it will be Minneapolis Silver Lake on Friday in the girls' Substate semifinals at Riley County in Class 3A. St. Mary's and Rossville, very familiar with one another, will play in the other semifinal. Other 3A girls play action from last night. In Hoisington, first round action, Ellsworth knocked off Nickerson 57-36. And Ellsworth, a team that Beloit beat a couple times this year, and it really wasn't that super close per se, and just goes to show you the difference in the competition levels at these substates, as the Hoisington substate is definitely not nearly as stacked and difficult as, say, the Southeast substate or the Riley County substate. So Ellsworth will move on and take on Hoisington on Friday at Hoisington. Southeast Saline girls fall last night, so the co-champions of the NCAA lose in the first round of substate. Southeast Saline losing Osage City in a stacked substate. 62-53 was that final. In 2A boys substate play last night, Smith Center winning over Oakley at home. It was their first home substate game since 2011. They get their first substate win since 2018. Congratulations, Coach Holbum and his crew, for getting that done. They'll move on and take on Plainville Friday in the semifinals in 2A out of Oakley. While Bunsey first round action, 2A Valley Heights got by Lincoln 38-34. Lincoln, I was told, had their chances to win that one. And it was Sacred Heart all over Republic County. 79-23 was that final. We will have our final edition of our Wednesday basketball locker room chats tonight. We'll talk to the girls and boys coaches of Beloit, Osmer, and Smith Center in Thunder Ridge at 5:15. And then tomorrow we'll talk to the girls and boys coaches of St. John's Tipton Lake Center, Rock Hills at 5:15. If you missed the wrestling locker room chats from last night, they're posted at our podcast page under Locker Room Chat Podcast, KDCountry94.com. Well, I had the pleasure of calling the game last night between Beloit and Minneapolis. It was a really intense, hotly contested game. Minneapolis led most of the night. They jumped out to a 5-0 lead. Beloit did not score their first point until 3:50 remained in the first quarter. Didn't have their first field goal until Peyton Remus hit a bucket with 2:25 to go in the first. But despite all that, Beloit was down just 5 at the end of one, 9-4. They're down 6 in the second quarter, came back to tie it at 15 apiece. Minneapolis led 17-15 at halftime. Beloit was down 21-15 and came back with a 9-2 run to go up 24-23 in the third. That lead was short-lived, however, and Minneapolis led by 2 going into the fourth. Beloit would tie it early in the fourth at 27-all. Brady Weatherman, her only field goal of the night, a fortuitous bounce on a three-point shot that hit the rim, bounced high, and went in. And that gave Minneapolis a five-point lead with about 5 minutes to go, but Beloit would battle back. They were down 4, 33-29 with a minute and a half to play, but Addison Budke drove to the hoop for a bucket, and then Brecken Boudreau had a big night, had a basket to tie the game with 42 seconds to play. Asenbutke then blocked a shot for Minneapolis on what was their final possession of regulation, and Beloit brought the ball down the floor. Asenbutke had a shot on the baseline. It was about a 15-16 footer that hit the heel and did not fall. So we went to overtime. In overtime, Beloit led 35-33. Ashland Knight then with a steal and a layup broke a 35-35 tie, gave Beloit a two-point lead. Minneapolis would go up one. Beloit would take the lead on a Brecken Boudreau bucket, 39-38. And then Minneapolis retook the lead at 40-39. And then Brecken Boudreau with a three-point play, as you just heard, with 22 seconds remaining, gave Beloit a two-point lead. Minneapolis calling a timeout. And Raylan Robinson, a junior, drove to the hoop and looked like the shot was going to go in. Did not. She was fouled. Minneapolis was in the double bonus as Beloit, the fouls, if you don't know, in high school basketball, your fouls reset every quarter. And when you get to five, it's double bonus, no more one and ones. But when you get to overtime, there is no resetting of the fouls. They set the clock to 4 minutes in overtime, which is half of a regular quarter, which is 8 minutes. So you roll over any remaining timeouts, plus you add a timeout for overtime for each team, and you roll over the team fouls. So it's as if it's still the fourth quarter, even though technically it's overtime. So Beloit had five team fouls, Minneapolis just a couple team fouls, and that was pretty important because whenever Minneapolis got fouled, they would go to the line for two free throws. And with 8.7 to play, Raylan Robinson, a 90% foul shooter, hit the first. Beloit called a timeout, set up whatever the scenario would be, if Robinson would make or miss. And after that long layoff during the timeout, which is also a ploy to ice the free throw shooter, it did not work as Raylan Robinson made the second. And if you flash back, I don't know how many years ago it was, Minneapolis had a chance to tie a game and send it into overtime, if I remember the situation correctly, at Substate against Beloit. And Minneapolis missed a free throw and their season ended because of not making that free throw at the end. In this case, it could have been the same thing had Robinson missed that second free throw. A lot of pressure on the junior. She came through at flying colors, knocked it down, ice water in her veins. So Beloit had the ball. They inbounded it with 8.7 to play, and the pass up the far sideline intended for Brecken Boudreau was overhead and out of bounds in the far corner. So Minneapolis and Beloit did not have a timeout remaining at that point. 4 seconds on the clock. Beloit with full court pressure, full court man, and Minneapolis gets the ball in the shoop with 4 seconds. They get in the shoop, and then McClure makes a beeline to the bucket on a back cut, and she is wide open. Great pass by Shoop. Hit her in stride. McClure lays it in right before the buzzer, and that was the end of the Beloit Lady Trojan season. They ended at 15-6 this year. They share of the league title at 8-2 in NCAA play. Minneapolis wins the rubber match. It was the third meeting of the year between the two teams. Minneapolis, 11 days ago, beat Beloit by one. Last night, they beat them by two at the buzzer, and they are now 16-5. Couple of notes here. Macy McClure hit the game-winning layup last night at the end of overtime at the buzzer, as you heard. She also hit the game-winning bucket to beat Beloit last year in Beloit, 43-41 in the final seconds. So she must like to play Beloit when it comes to those situations. You want to talk about other things that are interesting is, I don't know what year it was, I'd have to go back and look, but the Beloit boys on that very floor in the Substate semifinals, Minneapolis hosted, and Ellsworth got a steal and a layup at the buzzer to end Beloit season that year. I believe the score was 38-36 on that very same floor. Now, last night was Substate first round, but still Substate play. So it's crazy how you look at all these things, and Minneapolis gets the win. They're led by Mason McClure, had foul trouble. And, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this game last night. A lot of people want to point to turnovers. People want to point to you know, defensive strategy and so forth. And that all is true. It all combines to it. You know, Minneapolis making 17 out of 20 free throws and Beloit 5 of 10 is a difference in the game, no question. Foul trouble was a factor in this game for both teams. But to me, when I look back at this game, Beloit had a golden opportunity way back in the second quarter. We can all focus on the very last play of the game. That's the easy thing to do, right? Okay, got beat on a layup. That's why we lost the game. No, there's all kinds of things that combine to lose you a game. That's why I always say the officials don't really determine the game unless it's the exact very last play of the game. And even then you could argue, well, had you made a couple of easy layups, or had you made your free throws, or not had careless turnovers, or maybe you had a better scheme or strategy, whatever that might be. There's all kinds of things that could go differently had you done things differently. Hindsight is always 20/20. But I look back at this game in the second quarter. Macy McClure is their, I think, their best player. She's like the second leading scorer by 9.1 points. Weatherman average is 9.3. And She's their leading rebounder. She had two fouls and sat the entire second quarter until about the last 40 seconds. And Beloit didn't fully take advantage of it. I mean, they were down at by five, and they came back to tie it. But there was an opportunity with, I would argue, their best player, at least their best offensive player, who can drive it, can shoot it. When she was out, Minneapolis still never gave up the lead while she was out. So there was an opportunity there. So you can point to a lot of different things. And McClure was our SNS Dragon Home Health Athlete of the Game for Minneapolis. 14 points, 12 in the second half. And in overtime, she had the game-winning bucket. Maggie Shoup chipped in with 10, and Raylan Robinson with the 7 points, including those clutch free throws. And Minneapolis girls win in overtime at the buzzer, 44-42. Beloit ends their season at 15-6. As I said earlier, Southeast Saline and Beloit got a share of the league title, and both of them were knocked out in the first round of Substate last night. Beloit was led by Brecken Boudreaux, the only Trojan double figures. She was huge last night. She had 20 points, 18 in the second half, and in overtime combined. It was a new career high for Brecken, and Beloit needed it because they packed it in against Budke and Thompson. It was a good strategy there by Minneapolis. Make Beloit shoot the three. Beloit had only made 25 threes all year, and they basically said, hey, go ahead and shoot the three and see if you make it. And you make it, we'll have to adjust. And Beloit only made one three all night long. But without Boudreaux and her offensive performance last night, Beloit would have been in deep trouble. So she had a big game with 20, and she made a lot of good cuts to the bucket and to her. And you can't do it yourself. I mean, she had some really nice passes, especially by their post players on that high post flash to the elbow, and then Boudreaux would cut to the bucket. So it was a good job moving without the basketball. Boudreaux, who's only a sophomore, she had 20. She was also the SNS Drug and Home Health Athlete of the Game. The Sincon of Kansas Utility Player of the Games. It was Peyton Remus for Beloit. You know, Peyton, her numbers don't jump out at you. Offensively, you know, 6 points, three rebounds, three assists. That's nice. Almost two steals. But she was by far their primary ball handler. And Beloit has a huge void to replace next year. And you may say, well, 6 points and three rebounds, that's replaceable. Yeah, statistically that is. But what you don't know if you don't watch basketball and you don't watch Beloit play is that Peyton Remus rarely ever went to the bench, even if she was in foul trouble. Why was that? Because they don't have anybody else that can be a primary ball handler at this moment in time. They just don't. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. I've watched it. Peyton had to do this when she was a freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. She got better at protecting basketball each and every year. And so you may say, well, statistically, that shouldn't be hard to replace. Yeah, and there's also leadership. And there is no doubt that she was by far their primary ball handler. And when she was not on the floor, there were times where Beloit would look lost over the last few years. I mean, absolutely just like deer in headlights, what do we do now? Because we don't have the person that always brings the ball up. And there's a lot of pressure on a point guard who's like the captain of a quarterback on a football team, where the ball's in your hands a lot. You got to set up the offense. You got to get people where they need to be. You got to deal with the pressure, especially full court pressure like last night. Yeah, you're going to have turnovers. That's going to happen. You have the ball in your hands more than other people. The percentages go up that you're going to, one, you might score more, but if you're not really a scorer, you're going to distribute. So you're going to have more assists, but you're also going to have more turnovers. And so I think people are going to greatly appreciate Peyton Remus much more next year when they understand what she did that wasn't always in the box score. And there are people that don't watch the game, look at the box score and go, well, that's not that impressive. Well, she was a pretty important part of this team. And last night, every time after she got two fouls, she played with foul trouble, avoided the third. Then later in the game, when she got her fourth, I was holding my breath every time there's a foul she was near, because I'm like, if she fouls out, Beloit's probably toast. And that's from a person that had a three-pointer, and she had another bucket, only 5 points. But she has an impact on the game. She's highly respected in the league because coaches that vote on All-League understand what she does for her team. But there's certainly a lot of talent coming back for Beloit next year. No doubt when you have Budke and Thompson coming back, Olivia Wright, you got plenty of size coming back next year. And then you know, Dakota Gray will have a bigger role, you would think, next year. Brecken Boudreaux will have an even bigger role next year. And there are others that will be coming up the pipeline that they'll need to count on. But the biggest question for Beloit next year will be, who is going to handle the rock? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the primary ball handler? Because Beloit, over the last 3 or 4 years, really, they've only had one primary ball handler. Yeah, they've had other people that can dribble the ball some. But in regards to handling it, bringing it up against pressure, that was Peyton Remus' job for 4 years.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of teams that I've covered, whether it be like you're talking about with Peyton, because I've done plenty of Beloit games here over the last couple of years, too, to see her play. And you know, a lot of NPL schools that I cover where, you know, that point guard's not necessarily scoring 10 double figures, right, points per game. But, one, they're handling the ball better than anybody else can on the team, like you mentioned. Two, they're running an offense and controlling everything and understanding what needs to be done at that spot. And then two or three, a lot of them you see are going to be those type of defensive players that are going to be very important for you too, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like all that stuff doesn't get quantified by looking at points and rebounds per game, right? Like there's so much more to what a point guard means to a team than just scoring. And like if you have a point guard that can get you 15 to 20 points a game, that's unreal. That's awesome, mm-hmm. right? But if you don't, then you will. You'll find out. There's a particular team that I know for sure that found out when he graduated that it's like, yeah, this team's really, really good, but they're missing that one key element mm-hmm. that's going to keep them reeled in. And keep them on the right path here. And so those are so important. Like there's gonna be a lot of those players that do, they get all league and then people are like, what, well, how are they all league? Mm-hmm. they didn't dominate us. Well,
right,
coaches know.
Yeah.
if they're paying attention the right way and right. They're good coaches, they know.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And so, you know, and it applies also to other players, too. I mean, you can sit here and go, well, this person didn't look that impressive. Yeah, but she was a guard that averaged 5 rebounds and played really good defense. Or that big didn't have a good game. Okay, yeah, she averages 12. She only had 4 points. But did you see that she had 5 block shots, altered 4 others, and had 8 offensive rebounds? Well, you're just looking at points.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you and I talked about this the other day. Ayoka Lee against KU was 7 of 21 from the floor. It was an off game for her offensively. K-State has no chance in hell of winning that game if she's not on the floor, because her presence alone opens up things for her teammates. You know, it opens up things for the outside shooters, drives to the bucket. She also can help your defense by blocking shots so you can take more chances on the perimeter. By guarding and getting beat off the dribble, you know you got a shot blocker back there. And just the threat of her causes people to not go all the way to the rim, but they pull up with a floater or yeah. alter their shot. And you don't see that in a box score. Kind of goes back to the Chiefs and Chris Jones. Well, we only have 10.5 sacks. Yeah, but how many pressures have? Well, that's nice and all, but we don't need to pay them all that money. And maybe they don't have to. But also understand that he gets doubled, and that makes Nick Bolton's life easier. It makes George Kalafdis' job easier. It makes Steve Spagnuolo's job as defensive coordinator much easier to do various things when you have a stud that that draws that much attention. So when you have players that have off nights, as you think, offensively, that doesn't mean they didn't help their team win or put themselves in a position to win. So let's hear from Shauna Remus as the Beloit girls season comes to an abrupt end there. I thought we're going double overtime. I was all ready for double overtime. And I was okay with that. It would have been fun to do another 4 minutes. And Beloit did have a lot of foul trouble to deal with had they gone to double overtime with 3 players with 4 fouls. Or actually one fouled out. They had a couple of 4 fouls yet. Here's Shauna Remus, proud of her team despite the loss to end the season at Minneapolis.
In the end, these kids battled. And we could sit here, like you said, and analyze everything. But the bottom line is they never quit. They never gave up. It's not easy to come in here, you know, on the road. And the sub-state is ridiculously hard. And so we knew that coming in. We just wanted a chance to get to Riley. And our kids fought and gave the crowd that came. What a wonderful crowd we had. And it was just nice to see the support, and it was a heck of a game. These kids left everything on that court tonight for sure. You know, the season they've had and the things that we've accomplished this year, nobody can ever take away from them. And this stings right now, but when they look back on it, they're going to go, you know, wow, what a season. You know, nobody picked us to win the league. Nobody picked us to go, you know, get second out at Colby, and except for us. And we knew we could do it. And these kids believed, and I believed, and then, you know, they went and accomplished it. So super, super proud of all of them.
So Blue Lake girls season ends, a very successful year, 15-6, second at the Orange Black Classic Colby, where most people would have said they wouldn't even beat Hayes in the first round. Nobody had them winning the league title. They got a share of that this year. They were 4-17 last year. This year, 15-6, but they do lose in the first round of Substate on the road against a team they're very familiar with. Third meeting of the year, Minneapolis wins the rubber match, 44-42 in overtime. Once again, the Essence Drug and Home Health athletes of the game was Brecken Boudreau with 20, a career high for Beloit, and Mason McClure at 14 in the game winner for Minneapolis. The Syncon of Kansas utility players of the game, Remus for Beloit, and Raylan Robinson hitting those clutch free throws for Minneapolis. And the block of the game for HR Block and Beloit went to senior Ashlyn Knight, and the Cunningham telephone cable connection of the game, Marley Fowle on a sweet dish on a diagonal pass to Cassandra Thompson for a layup in the second quarter. It was the final game for the four seniors, Peyton Remus, Marley Fowle, Ashlyn Knight, and Kerrigan Hubert. So for a complete rundown of all the scores from last night in Substate Brackets and more, visit ncksports.com. We'll have the Beloit boys tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, pregame around 5:45 or 5:50 on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, as the Beloit boys will take on Silver Lake, who's 14-7, albeit at Riley County, and then Rossville, Nemaha Central will be the second semifinal coming up tomorrow night there in Riley County. And then the girls' Substate semifinals will take place coming up on Friday at Riley County. And the championship game on Saturday, the boys will be at 5 o'clock, and the girls will be at 6:30 on Saturday. We'll also have a doubleheader of basketball for you tomorrow night from Mankato. Osborne will take on Frankfort in the first Substate semifinal from Rock Hills High School at 6 o'clock, and then Rock Hills will play on their home floor at 7:30 against Clifton Clyde. So that'll be the boys' matchup there coming up tomorrow, a doubleheader at 6 and 7:30. Dust will have the call there. Osborne boys, the 1 seed. Frankfort, very dangerous, 4 seed, 11-9. Clifton Clyde boys are the 2 seed. They're very good at 18-3 against Rock Hills, who is coming in this one, I believe, at 7-12 on the season. And then on Friday, the Osborne girls will be in action as they will take on Clifton Clyde, if I remember that correctly. And that will, let me see if I can pull this up here because I don't have it in front of me, but I want to make sure that I give you the correct information here on Friday. But I believe that is the late game coming up on Friday, but I may be wrong on that as I go to ncksports.com to make sure that I have all of this correct. Come on now. Here you go, computer. Yes, Clifton Clyde. That'll be the early game on Friday. Osborne girls against Clifton Clyde, 6 o'clock on Friday. We'll have that for you on Z96.3 Lake on Friday, and we'll have the doubleheader of the boys from Mankato tomorrow night on Z96.3 Lake and Beloit boys on KD Country 94 tomorrow evening. Coming up in 30 seconds, the Jayhawks losing at home.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. You depend on your vehicle every day to get you where you need to go. The best way to keep it ready and avoid breakdowns is through proper maintenance. Whether it's oil, fluids, filters, spark plugs, belts, hoses, or brakes, we can help. Give yourself the peace of mind of knowing your vehicle is ready to go. For fast, friendly vehicle maintenance, call Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Find us just south of the courthouse or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
76-68, BYU with a historic win in Allen Fieldhouse. Give them all the credit in the world. Kansas coughed this one up and honestly gave it away with so many missed opportunities offensively in what was their toughest, least efficient offensive half of basketball all season.
BYU knocks off KU in the fog. First home loss of the season for KU, snapping a 19-game home winning streak. No Kevin McCullough again last night. BYU made a double-digit second-half comeback, and they pull off the upset. KU led 41-29 2 minutes into the second half, but the Cougars start hitting some threes and eventually took the lead with 4:50 to play. Kansas was able to tie it on a three by Hunter Dickinson, but eventually BYU made the plays down the stretch. Dickinson led the Jayhawks with 17 points, 11 rebounds, just 6 of 15 from the line, though, so 19 of 31 from the line as a team. BYU made 13 threes. KU made three. Yesterday we played the cut from Bill Self saying, listen, you know, they're going to shoot a lot of threes, and if they make 12 or 13 and we say we make three, that's minus 30.
That's exactly what happened.
Literally, he said, if they make 13 and we make 3, we're minus 30.
And that's what happened.
That was the cut, and it was exactly 13 and 3.
KU was 3 of 15 from 3. Furphy couldn't make anything. Timberlake couldn't make anything. And if they can't make it from the outside, Kansas is in deep trouble without McCuller. That means Dickinson have to have a big night, or Adams, and Harris is not a guy you can rely on to score 20 a night, that's for sure. And so, and BYU made 13 threes. And I saw them against K-State, they couldn't make threes.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between one night and the next. And this is why we see this college basketball all the time. How does Connecticut beat Marquette by 28, turn around, lose at Creighton by 19, and then Creighton loses at St. John's? I mean, that's how it went exactly in order. I don't know. I mean, because every game starts at 0-0.
Yeah.
This just in to the sports ticket. That every game starts at 0-0. You don't get to automatically have the momentum of a big win 2 days later on the road.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. And so you have to be ready to play no matter what. And, you know, I've kind of talked about this a little bit, and I've hinted at it, that KU fans just automatically think they're going to win at home. And I don't blame them for thinking that. They rarely lose at home. But I'm like, this team is definitely capable of losing at home to Texas, BYU, or K-State. And I don't think they're winning at Baylor. I don't think they're winning at Houston without Kevin McCuller. Even if he did play, I'm not sure they would. And so you're sitting here and going, well, they've got to go 9-0 at home just to get to 11-7 in this conference. But what if they lose one at home? Well, here we go. They lost one at home, and you know, K-State's going to come in next Tuesday. They're going to think they can win there after seeing what BYU did. Kansas is not invincible. They're not as formidable without Kevin McCuller. They've won two games at home. I still don't understand how they did. You know, how they blew out Texas without McCuller, Texas should be ashamed of themselves. And they beat Baylor at home and without McCuller, and I'm still not sure how they did that. And so Kansas right now, they are really looking at a situation where, well, first of all, the Big 12 title, that's gone for sure. I mean, technically it's not, but it is. They're 21-7, 9-6 in the Big 12. I mean, you're sitting here right now going, if Kansas can't beat K-State at home, they're 9-9. And if K-State wins out, they'd be a higher seed in the Big 12 tournament. Do you know that?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's a big effort for K-State to win out.
Yeah.
But I mean, and last night, Hunter Dickinson, kind of a, I've seen the replay here. What he did wasn't necessary. Going through a huddle of BYU players, and then it caused an altercation.
Yeah.
And BYU got, they got ignited after that. They outscored KU 45-27 after that happened. And Mark Pope got a tee. That got his team going. He said they were, he goes, I knew we were in good shape. He said after the game, when I looked at my team and they were more composed than I was. They're like, we got it, coach. We're good. We're good. And they're playing in the fog, you know, where you're intimidated and so forth and so on. And BYU bounced back after not playing very well in Manhattan on Saturday. And they win. Give them credit. It's a team that's been in the top 25 most of the season. And they got it done last night. And Bill Self certainly not happy with his team and the loss.
We got what we deserved tonight. We didn't do enough to put any pressure on them. Didn't play the scouting report very well. And obviously, we played terribly offensively. Bottom line is this. It's hard when you get outscored 30 points from beyond the arc. I was hoping it would be more like 15. And then we'd make enough twos to make the difference.
But that's not what happened. And KU loses last night to BYU at home. They're three games behind Houston with three remaining. Number one, Houston, speaking of them, they win over Cincinnati 67-59. They're in the driver's seat to win this conference. Texas picked up an 81-69 win at Texas Tech. All kinds of problems with that game. There were bottles thrown. Texas Tech, of course, hates Texas, especially when Chris Beard left for Texas and then, of course, got fired after a short period there.
People are reading that headline and not understanding what actually happened, though, because there's that Cunningham kid turned into a hockey player going for a ball that was at the sideline and just checked a guy into the scorer's table for Texas Tech. And it erupted into a lot of different things, and then that's when the bottle started going out on the court, right? Mm-hmm. That was definitely not started by Texas Tech, but you can't be doing that, obviously, and throwing bottles on the court. But he did, man, and he was like, why am I getting a flagrant? You just turned into like a hockey or football player and just checked a dude out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad. Like, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Well, yeah, go block him, but you can't, like...
It's interesting.
Hit him like it's football.
I'd have to look at it again. I saw it once. I saw it very quickly.
Yeah.
In fairness, I saw it very quickly this morning. I had tons of things getting ready for the show and hosting Waterside Wake Up. And when I watched it, and like I said, I didn't like analyze it and look at it multiple times. But when I saw it for the first time, I'm like, I didn't think it was that big a deal.
Yeah.
I really did.
There's three or four different angles that they were showing on replays, and it's not – anything like what you want to be doing when you're trying to keep a guy from getting the basketball.
But in NBA, that's a no call. As we just saw the other night with the Pistons, you take out a guy and the other team gets the game-winning bucket. It's a no call. And there's no flagrant two.
Yeah.
There's no people throwing bottles. And also in the pros, they're not storming the court after a win either. So Bill's not happy, and rightfully so, but this roster is flawed because of the, you know, he lost a couple big guys. Uday leaving was not expected, and that would have been nice to have had him, athletic guy above the rim, no doubt, and give Dickinson more time to catch his breath. And there's just too much pressure on Dickinson, in my opinion, right now. And I know he's getting supposedly paid $2 million a year to play at KU, but there is too much on his shoulders because Harris is just not going to be the scorer that you need him to be. That's just not his M.O., and I'm not trying to blame him. You just can't turn somebody into something they aren't right off the bat.
The sample Adams, size is beyond there.
Right, and K.J. Adams is not a high-volume shooter or scorer. So you've got to have Dickinson has to have probably a 20-10 night at least, and you have to have Furphy playing like he had, and that's put a lot of stock in a 17-, 18-year-old kid who had reclassified who, if he hadn't, wouldn't even be in college right now. And then you're counting on a guy that was playing at Towson last year to save the day, and if you're counting on Nicholas Timberlake to save the day, then it's gone bad for Kansas. So you know, this team is severely flawed. There's no way they should be ranked in the top 10. I thought that, you know, last week or so. At the same time, their resume says they should be, but they're not playing like it. And without McCullough, they're a whole different team. I mean, let's just be honest about it. So Kansas is in some trouble. Not that they won't make the tournament. Can they turn it around? Listen, I still think Kansas, I'm going to be that optimistic guy like I was with the Chiefs. But it's predicated on one thing, obviously. And that is if McCullough is healthy and ready to go for the NCAA tournament, I still believe this Kansas team can make a run. When Kansas is disrespected a little bit, overlooked a little bit, when it was Roy Williams or Bill Self as head coach at Kansas in the tournament, they tend to do better than people expect. Because what do they always expect? Final Four, national championship, because they're a one seed all the time. But this Kansas team, I think about 2012. That was a team that was a two seed. That was a team that grinded to wins. Thomas Robinson, Jeff Withey, Tyshawn Taylor, Elijah Johnson, they made it all the way to the national title game, and it could have easily lost second round. And they pulled one out second round, pulled one out Sweet 16, then they beat Ohio State in a Final Four down in New Orleans, and they lost to Kentucky, Anthony Davis was a stud, and they lost to Kentucky by 8 in the national championship game. And that Kansas team, to be honest with you, had no business being championship game compared to other Kansas teams that never made it to the Final Four. And then just a few years ago, you know, in 2018, when Kansas beat Duke up in Omaha, and you know, Kansas was a good team, but, you know, a lot of people didn't expect them to beat Duke. And then they got blown out by Villanova. So those are teams that, you know, were a little bit overlooked, no question, especially that Thomas Robinson team in 2012. And when they're the hunted, you know, when you're a one seed, a two seed, there's a ton of pressure on you. But if Kansas ends up being a three or a four, suddenly they lie in the weeds a little bit, and people are going to write them off, much like people wrote the Chiefs off, which is a big mistake. And granted, the KU doesn't have number 15 Patrick Mahomes, but they do have number 15 Kevin McCullough. If McCullough can be healthy, Kansas, I think, is very capable of making a deep run in the tournament. Also, it depends on matchups. But if Kevin McCullough is not 100% or at least close to 100% going to NCAA tournament, this Kansas team, I don't see how they make it past the second round.
I would argue
they might not win the first round.
Yeah. If the trajectory keeps going this way, then your seed's not going to be obviously as great, and you might have a much tougher matchup in the first round, I'm with you. I'm not guaranteeing that they're going to make it to the round of 32, right? Like they're going to have to, you know, play one of their better games of the year, if not their best, to even just make it out of the first round the way it's going right now, just based on where they might fall in the bracket.
Yep. Coming up, K-State in Focus. It is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit.
All right, it is senior night tonight for the K-State women. They are ranked now 15th, I believe, in the country. They've fallen after losing to KU. Iowa State comes to town. K-State lost Iowa State recently in double overtime in Ames. Iowa State 10-6 in conference play, 16-10. K-State 23-5, 12-4 in the Big 12. They have a very slim chance of maybe getting a share of the Big 12 title. They'd have to win out and need a lot of things to happen. So more than likely, they won't win the Big 12. But they do have a lot to play for, trying to be in the top 16 so they could possibly host the first and second round of the NCAA tournament at Bramlage. K-State is undefeated at home, as was KU men last night. K-State women are undefeated at home. They'll see if they can keep that going on senior night tonight for the K-State women. The K-State men, of course, coming off the win against BYU. They take on Cincinnati coming up on Saturday at 6 o'clock. That will not be easy. There is no easy game in the Big 12, as we know, especially on the road. And for K-State to make the NCAA tournament, this is probably one of those games where, once again, you probably need to win it. Baseball-wise, K-State baseball team was ranked to start the year at number 24. And they are off to a 4-3 start as they took 2 out of 3 from Holy Cross, losing in extra innings on Saturday 13-10, but then winning on Sunday 5-4. And they'll take on University of Massachusetts Lowell, however you want to pronounce it, coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for a 3-game set. And then they'll play Tennessee in Knoxville for just a game on Tuesday, March the 5th. Our focus on K-State Athletics is brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, Royals update. The Royals played 2 yesterday, split squad situation. They beat the Rockies 4-3, and they lost to the Padres 6-3. Michael Wacha making his debut. Wacha, Wacha, Wacha. And Brady Singer will make his spring training debut today at 2:10 as the Royals take on the Mariners. Royals are 4-2. In the Grapefruit League, Cactus League, whatever you want to call it. That's what the Royals are. And we end here with the Chiefs. Chiefs are expected to place the franchise tag on L'Jarius Sneed, according to many reports yesterday, which could lead to him being traded to another team before the draft if no deal with the Chiefs is reached. In 2019, Dee Ford was in a similar situation and was traded to the 49ers for a second-round pick. So if the Chiefs... Let's ask this question, okay? They would like to keep Snead, but they're not going to keep him. It doesn't appear on a franchise tag. So they're either going to work out a deal or they're going to trade him. That's what all reports are. Mm-hmm. And they're in a position, as we talked about the last few days, where they can afford to trade him and get something for him. And they have a little more flexibility if they don't keep him financially. They could keep him on the tag, but that still hurts them. $19.8 million is now the tag that went up with the new salary cap numbers. So almost $20 million against you there on a franchise tag with Snead. And the Chiefs obviously want some flexibility. So it'd be best off for them to sign him to a long-term extension and then backload some of that money, signing bonus, guarantee money, blah, 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 and not have as much of a hit to their cap this upcoming season when they're going for a three-peat. Also, it provides flexibility to perhaps keep Chris Jones in the fold. If the Chiefs did trade L'Jarius Sneed, what do they have to get for him? At least, I mean, a first-round pick I don't think is happening. A second-round pick would be not bad. You know, somebody threw one out there is that, you know, Kyle Pitts has not been great for the Falcons, but he hasn't had good quarterbacks to work with, and he was a top 10 pick coming out of Florida. He's outstanding talent. Do you trade L'Jarius Sneed for Kyle Pitts if the Falcons, and everybody wants a shutdown corner for the most part, you're like, everybody, the Chiefs are willing to trade one of theirs. Well, they have another one. They have a luxury of having 2 shutdown corners. A lot of teams don't have any. So if you could go get a Kyle Pitts, and maybe there has to be another late-round pick included to trade Snead away, or maybe it's just straight-up Kyle Pitts for L'Jarius Sneed. I don't think I'd trade Snead in a pick for Kyle Pitts, but I don't know what would happen there. A.J. Brown reportedly is unhappy in Philadelphia, but he has a big contract. But they're like, well, you know, you trade Snead to the Eagles, you could get A.J. Brown. I'm like, oh, man, wow, we're dreaming here. The Kyle Pitts one makes a little bit more sense to me. You finally find your heir apparent to Kelsey. But is Kyle Pitts a victim of his situation with the team he's with and the offense they run and the changing coaches and coordinators and the quarterbacks he's worked with? Or is he maybe not as good as we think? You know, Kadarius Toney was supposedly, he was a first-round pick. He was highly talented. And then we got traded to the Chiefs. He's a Tyreek Hill clone.
Well, okay, that does stop. That we knew that wasn't the case at the time. But he has Tyreek Hill-like speed. Yeah, but can he catch the ball? Can he catch a cold? Can he line up correctly? You know, so forth and so on. And the Chiefs gave up, you know, not a ton. They gave up some draft pick compensation, obviously, to get Tony. And he hasn't worked out very well, but he did make a couple plays in the Super Bowl 57 where they beat the Eagles. So you could say Kadarius Toney was never the talent that people said, or he simply never was able to put it together, and he was what he was with the Giants, and the Chiefs are trying to make him something different. Is Kyle Pitts fall in that category where he's a decent player but not the star that people thought he was going to be? Maybe he doesn't have the work ethic. Maybe he's just not that good in general. Or is it, man, he's got a lot of potential, but he's not used right at all by the Falcons. They're changing coaches again. Yeah, what's the GM of the Falcons just said, we have a lot of faith in Kyle Pitts. So we don't even know if Kyle Pitts is we have no idea if Kyle Pitts is even be available via trade. Do you trade a 32nd overall pick, a first round pick for Pitts, and you keep Snead? And who says you got to trade Snead to get Pitts? I don't know what your thoughts are, but I do know that we've been talking about this for at least 3 years, that the Chiefs at some point have to get the understudy ready to go to move on past Kelsey. I'm not trying to rush Kelsey out the door, but I would say he's got 2 or 3 years left max. And at what level? Regular season wasn't his normal level, and they kicked it in gear in the playoffs.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. The one thing that I always bring up in this conversation about a tight end for the Chiefs is that we don't know who Noah Gray is yet. Like, we don't, because Travis Kelce's that dude, right? Like, we don't know if that's what they're planning on with Noah Gray, right? Like, I don't know that. I don't think anybody knows that yet. But I will say, if you are going to go get another tight end and Noah Gray's not the guy, I'd rather trade Legarius Sneed for a pick and go get the tight end that I want. Instead, because I don't think that I take a chance on a guy that I don't know. Is he not good because he's at Atlanta, or is he not good because?
Well, but do you know Noah Gray? I mean,
no, I don't. That's what I'm saying, though. If you are going to use Legarius Sneed to get a tight end, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I would rather trade him to somebody for a pick and go get that guy. If I can get a second round pick.
So you're going to draft a tight end with a second round pick?
I don't know if I am or not, but what I'm saying
is... What do you mean by go get that guy if you're not going to trade for Kyle Pitts? What do you mean by that?
What I mean is Brett Veach, trade for it, and then go get the tight end you want in the second round if that's your plan, to get a tight end this high and you know somebody and you've identified somebody.
I'm confused. Hold on a second. I'm confused. You say trade for it. What do you... So you're...
For the pick. If I'm trading Legarius Sneed...
So you're trading Legarius Sneed for a pick.
Yes.
And then you're going to use that pick to get a tight end.
If that's the plan for the Chiefs. If they're trying to get somebody. I would rather Brett Veach make the decision to go find a dude that he's identified, is what I'm saying, than trade for Kyle Pitts. Because I don't think that's the right direction to go, to be honest with
you. So you're saying...
And I think you're going to need more... I think...
So you're saying just get a pick and use it wherever you want.
Absolutely.
Okay, when you said for it, that was like making specific, like you were wanting a specific player.
No, I'm just saying if he's looking for a tight end right now, mm-hmm. I would rather, you know, have a second round dude that he's identified that might be the future at that position than Kyle Pitts. That's just what I'm saying. I don't know if he's going to use that on a tight end or not. Like I said, I don't know if they have given up on Noah Gray being the next Travis Kelce.
I'd have to look at the tight end class this year. That would be
and
in
I don't
draft.
Know if it's yeah. And I'm not saying that that's the pick that they need to use. What I'm saying is I would rather have the Chiefs go find a tight end of their own than trade for Kyle Pitts. To be completely honest with you.
Wow. Okay.
Because I don't want to. I don't like being
Kyle
in these
Pitts
situations.
Isn't old. He's on a rookie
no,
deal.
No, I get that.
He had 1,000 yards receiving with Matt Ryan at quarterback.
Yeah, I get it.
He's underutilized then. He was a fourth overall pick. You're trading Snead, who is Pitts is probably younger than Snead. You're trading this hypothetical trade. And I don't even know if the Falcons would do it straight up.
Yeah.
The Chiefs might have to throw in a draft pick. But Kyle Pitts is 23. Okay, he's 23. And he has a 1,000-yard season in this league, and he had to play with a Desmond Ridder is his rookie quarterback last year. He had to deal with Marcus Mariota, the year prior to that.
Sure.
So when he had a good quarterback, Matt Ryan, he had 1,000 yards and 68 receptions. Now imagine what he'd do with the Chiefs. He's only 23. He's still on his rookie deal. Now, I will say this. You'll have to pay him money sooner than if you would draft the tight end, as you're talking about. But at the same time, you know, how many times have we talked about this? You draft... It's one thing to go, if you're going to be looking at Kyle Pitts, who's a 32-year-old tight end, I'm totally agreement. I agree with you. Like, dude, you know, this guy's going to cost us too much on top of everything else. We're talking about a 23-year-old guy with freakish athletic ability who's actually done something in this league that no draft pick you're going to grab has accomplished or done anything.
Sure, I get that. Yeah.
And so you use that pick for Sky Moore. Gee, should have got Kyle Pitts. Use it for Rashee Rice. You go, okay. I agree with Dusty. So yeah. That's the thing. I mean, your draft picks are, you know, a crapshoot at times, and Brett Veach has done a really good thing, but people are saying that if Snead is traded, they should at least get a second-round pick. Okay, let's look at second-round picks in regards to offensive weapons. The second-round picks that the Brett Veach has made the last 2 years have been receivers, and that's Sky Moore, who people would say, wow, yeah, you're telling me you're going to trade LeJarius Sneed for a guy like Sky Moore? Do not sign me up for that. Get me Kyle Pitts. Mm-hmm. But if you say, well, we're going to get a guy like Rashee Rice instead of Sky Moore with a second-round pick if we trade Sneed for a second-round pick, well, okay, maybe I'm okay with not worrying about Kyle Pitts because I would have the full rookie contract instead of a partial with Kyle Pitts. For me, personally, I think Kyle Pitts, this is my opinion, answer my question, is I think he just needs a quarterback. That's it. He needs a quarterback. And we see what the Chiefs do with guys that other, like, you know, Justin Watson's a serviceable player for mm-hmm. the Chiefs, for crying out loud. And Mecole Hardman goes to Jets and can't play, and then comes to Chiefs and can play and makes the game-winning catch in the Super Bowl. I personally would love to see if Kyle Pitts is a Chief. The question is, can you trade Snead straight up for Pitts? Because that is a number 4 overall pick, and Snead was a 4th-round pick. And they're both capable of being all pros at their position. Snead should have been this year. And Pitts, when he's had a real good quarterback over 1,000 yards his rookie year. I mean, that was only a couple years ago. So I'm intrigued by it, but I don't think it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
But if you're telling me that the Chiefs pick up the phone and call Atlanta, and Atlanta's willing to trade Kyle Pitts straight up for Snead, I say, I do it. Because I keep my draft capital as well. I don't trade a draft pick. I get an established tight end in this league who's 23 on a rookie deal, and I keep my draft pick.
Yeah.
I can go get it for another position.
It 100% cannot be anything less than straight up. The Chiefs can't be trading draft picks. My thing is, I think the Chiefs should get more than just Kyle Pitts. Has he done enough to warrant getting traded? And I know you said he's the number 4 pick, and that's what the Falcons are going to use, right? Mm-hmm. That he was the number 4 pick. But we're talking about a corner that you franchised for $19 million.
Right.
Is Kyle Pitts for LeJarius Sneed? Is Kyle Pitts, has he done enough to be worth $19 million right now, is the question, right?
Well, he's not going to cost $19 million.
That's what I'm saying, though.
So he's not going to cost
$19
million.
But the trade-up of who you're
We're going to get cheaper and save money on the cap by getting Kyle Pitts on a rookie
deal. I get that. What I'm saying is the Chiefs should get more than Kyle Pitts.
Okay, now, that was the next thing I was going to say.
Yeah, if I'm making this trade, they should get more than Kyle Pitts.
What should they get?
I'm going to say Kyle Pitts in like a 5th, maybe. I don't know what it would translate to.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a 2nd and Kyle Pitts.
No. The Falcons,
I think,
would
Kyle
be nuts.
Pitts in a 5th would be kind of like, I'm saying, this is a $19 million dude that we're trading away. I'm not saying that cost the Chiefs $19 million. What I'm saying is we need to get compensation for $19 million because that's what he's tagged at.
Well, No, I disagree with that. I mean, you can get players that are just as good as Snead on a rookie deal that costs less than $19 million. I don't have to get $19 million worth of the player, especially if he's overpaid. If I've got LeJarius Snead at $19 million, that's not how I look at it at all. I look at it as I've got to replace Snead in the secondary. I can use my draft picks to address that. I could trade for a corner to replace Snead. I don't worry about the $19 million because the $19 million actually hurts me in this whole equation. That's the reason why I'm thinking about trading him. So I'm not thinking about getting $19 million worth of contract or value. What I'm trying to get is value for the player. And I want a player that's capable of being one of the best at his position, because LeJarius Sneed is. So I take the financial part out of that equation. I need $19.8 million in value. No, what you need is you need to get talent wise what you think you're getting.
And, absolutely, and you're talking
potential.
With that part of it too.
You're talking potential with Kyle Pitts. Darius Sneed maybe has realized his potential. Maybe Sneed has peaked and Kyle Pitts hasn't. And that's the thing about trades in any sport. You're looking for what? You're trading for potential, usually, right? When you trade a veteran player in Major League Baseball, because that's where we see a lot of these trades, you're trading him for prospects. And you may be giving up a player that could be really good for you for 2 years.
Absolutely.
But you might be at three prospects, and one of those ends up being a Cy Young candidate, and he's a tremendous starter for your team for 5-6 years. Okay, you got less value financially, obviously, but you got way more value in talent and team control with a contract. And so, you know, you would have, I'd have to look at Pitts' contract. I'm sure he's got a couple years left. Usually it's a 5-year deal in the rookie deal. So he's probably got a couple years left. I'd have to pull it up. So you would actually be saving money, and you would actually get an established player in the National Football League in Kyle Pitts. And you put a young, talented tight end with Kelce, who could be a great mentor, and you have Mahomes working with him. That's pretty good. Not bad.
Yeah, no matter what they do with L'Jarius Sneed, they're going to be saving money. There's no question about
that. If they trade him,
yeah. If they tag him and then trade him, they're saving money no matter what decision they make there. But I understand when I'm trading L'Jarius Sneed for a pick, I'm not matching $19 million because I don't know what that pick's going to do.
Right.
But when I'm actually trading him for an actual NFL player, that goes into the mind a little bit more than when you're just trading picks for players. Like the Major League Baseball, you're trading away. You're dumping a contract in Major League Baseball most of the time when you're doing that.
Sometimes a team will pick up something.
Yeah, and so then you're getting prospects back, and I understand it's going to take a while for that all to develop and see if you actually got what that was worth, right? Like for the trade. But man, when I'm trading players straight up, I'm not saying that dude's making that right now, but I feel like the production needs to be at a fairly close level of being worth what you're trading away.
But isn't $9 million worth of cap space worth something?
It absolutely is, yeah.
That's worth draft picks.
Yeah.
Because you got $9 million to spend on your draft picks.
And what I'm saying,
go get a free agent receiver like a Hunter Renfrow who's not going to cost you a ton, or maybe get a Tyler Lockett. Because Kyle Pitts, his cap number this year, he's under contract for 2 more years. So the Chiefs would have control of him this year and 2025.
Yeah.
Okay? And his cap hit is $10.5 million. In 2024 and 10.8 in 2025, and Sneed's tag is $19.8 million. So when you're trading Sneed to Pitts straight up, see, this is the thing. When you traded Tyreek Hill, you didn't get any players. You got a whole bunch of draft picks. Did you get equal amount of value, $30 million? Hell no, you didn't.
No, and I'm not asking for that part of it.
No, so, but you have to factor in that the Chiefs, we talked about, what was the biggest great thing about trading Tyreek Hill? One of the biggest things. Salary cap flexibility. We're not paying a receiver $30 million
Absolutely.
A year. You trade L'Jarius Sneed, and you get a 23-year-old tight end, if you can get it straight up. A 23-year-old tight end, okay, who has a 1,000-yard season. His cap hit is $9 million less than L'Jarius Sneed, and he's a younger player,
yeah,
under team control for 2 years. Forget an extra draft pick. You just got $9 million in cap space. That's worth draft
but
pick or
two. Then I come back to what I said earlier, though, about why I said what I said about if Brett Veach has somebody identified, I'd rather go him get a high pick and then draft him with that pick, because you can erase $19 million instead of just 9 if you just go get the guy that you think is going to be your guy in the draft, right?
Well, you can shift a whole bunch of things. You're going to spend the money one way or the other. I mean, you're going to do their expense.
Well, you're going to spend the money,
Sneed,
yeah,
you're
going to
replace their wide receiver. You're going to get a left tackle, whatever the case may be. I'm just saying you got to look at the trade as it is on the surface. If it's Pitts for Sneed, you gain $9 million in cap space, because if you keep Sneed at the tag, that's $19.8 million. And you still keep all your draft picks. You don't give up any draft picks. You get a 23-year-old tight end, number 4 overall pick, who has a 1,000-yard season with an established quarterback. He's only 23. Team control for 2 years. You save $9 million on your cap. You get a guy controllable for 2 years who's younger than the guy you're trading away. And the guy you're trading away might be at the peak of his career in his prime, and Pitts might be entering it at 23. I'm just saying, I would do it. If it's straight up, I'm doing it. I ain't worried about drafting my tight end. I am going with a guy that I mean, there's not going to be too many guys in this draft that are going to have a grade of the 4th overall pick. And Kadarius Toney didn't have no 1,000-yard season with the Giants, so that's not really a comparison. The comparison I made was, what if Kyle Pitts is not as good as we think he is? But Pitts actually has actually produced on the field.
Yeah.
And Toney never has.
No.
The Chiefs thought the potential they could pull it out of him, and so far they haven't been able to do it. Kyle Pitts, you know he's at least established something. You know, there are people that will say, listen, I want to take the guy that's young, that's actually been in the league for a couple of years, instead of a guy that looks great in college but can't separate from DBs in the pros. So then I wasted a draft pick, and I could have had that guy be my stud, ready to step in immediately. If Kelce gets hurt, I immediately have a number one tight end. Right now, Kelce gets hurt, oh my, that second round draft pick is not ready to go in week four. He may take a year or two. Rashee Rice didn't get really going until the middle of the season. Took him 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks. And then the other thing, too, when you think about the Chiefs is Sky Moore never really has caught on. So which, you know, when you're sitting here and going, which Kyle Pitts are we going to get, which I brought up, well, what draft pick are you going to get? Are you going to get Rashee Rice or Sky Moore? Because there's a pretty big difference.
Yeah, and you're not going to know that until they get in and actually do it.
Right.
So,
but you do. Here's the thing. You don't know anything about the draft picks that you are talking about doing to fill that spot. You know plenty about Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
You have many knowns with Kyle Pitts compared to the unknowns of a draft pick.
But, yeah. And like I say,
that's why I'd be more for it.
And I'm not when I say what I'm saying. If the Chiefs make a move and trade for Kyle Pitts, LeJarius need Kyle Pitts straight up. I'm not going to sit here and say like I'm against it.
Sure,
but I'm saying that I don't think the compensation's right straight up, and I don't know if. Listen, bottom line is you're not trading any extra draft picks with LeJarius need to make this deal. Just make sure that doesn't happen. Would be the top of my list.
Yeah.
Because that's, I don't think it's worth it just based on compensation. So I don't know. I'm not going to be against it. That's why I think it won't happen. Yeah.
Because Snead is 27. He's 4 years older. I don't think the Falcons are going to trade Pitts straight up for Snead.
No, I don't either.
And you don't think the Chiefs should trade him straight up. But they're the ones that have to give Snead the big time deal. And the Chiefs don't have to give Pitts a long-term deal until at least a full year from now.
Yeah.
And then once again,
that's what comes with trading for a player like
economics.
That, too, right?
Yeah. It's economics. Yeah. It's a salary cap, and that has to factor into the equation when you make trades. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Chiefs do. And then it goes back what you said is, do you think Noah Gray can
be
a number one tight end? Do you think Noah Gray can be a number one tight end? If you think he can be, then you probably don't make this trade unless it's just – so unbelievably can't turn it down. But if you don't think Noah Gray is a number one tight end, even more reason to make this move if it's available to you.
I think the biggest problem with the Chiefs saying, is he a number one tight end, is because you're replacing Travis Kelce.
Sure, right.
Is he a number one tight end in the NFL? Very well could be. Is he a number one tight end of Travis Kelce's caliber and level? Nobody's going to be.
No.
Yeah, I don't think
anyway. Well, that's kind of how I feel about Kyle Pitts. He is a number one tight end in this league.
Sure.
He's a starting tight end, but he's not.
But can Noah Gray be that?
But
that's the question.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so is either one Kelce level? Well, nobody in the history of the league really is.
Yeah.
You know?
So that we're making unfair comparisons on who we want as a tight end for the Chiefs because we've seen what a lot of people think is the greatest to ever do it.
I'll tell you what. If Kelce retires tomorrow, I am calling up the Atlanta Falcons. That's my first call. Because I got to have two tight ends. And right now, the Chiefs don't have more than two. Blake Bell's not a pass-catching tight end. You know, Jody Fortson's always hurt. So, yeah, and that's the fun about free agency and trade season is what, you know, and there's not tons of trades that happen in the National Football League, but that's appealing to me. It's appealing to me. I'm not saying they should for sure do it, but if it was straight up and you save $9 million on your cap, and now you can take that $9 million and go get a really good wide receiver. And you feel like you have the answers to replace Snead in-house on the team already, and you have draft picks to throw at that issue, and or you have more money, you save the $9 million, go get a left tackle to fill the void until Wanya Morris is ready at left tackle, then I'm all for it. So I think one of the things that is overlooked when you look at these trades, well, Snead straight up for Pitts. Well, Snead, I mean, he's a shutdown corner. Pitts is still, you know, hopefully ascending into a top-flight tight end. Yeah. Pitts cost $10 million. Snead's going to cost at least $20 at minimum on a franchise tag. So the reason, and you're sitting here going, well, just re-sign Snead. Well, listen, if the Chiefs re-sign Snead, then this is a trade we're not going to talk about. The Chiefs aren't going to re-sign Snead and then trade him. The only reason the Chiefs are going to trade Snead is that they can't work out a long-term deal. And it sounds like, according to reports, they don't want to take the cap hit of $19.8 million with the franchise tag that they'd have to pay Snead to keep him. So they may very well tag him, but the reports are they'll tag him. That buys them time, and they have to a certain date to work out a long-term deal. And then the Chiefs got to decide, okay, are we going to go ahead and take a $20 million hit on a corner, or are we going to trade him? And that's what happened with Dee Ford. The Chiefs didn't work out a long-term deal. They franchise tagged him. And then eventually the Chiefs were like, we don't want to take this big cap hit with Dee Ford. And I thought it was a great move. The Chiefs traded him away. And they got a second-round pick, which was great because Dee Ford was injury-prone. Now, LeJarius Sneed has been pretty solid for the Chiefs. And Pitts is 4 years younger. So there's many things alike about a straight-up trade. Sneed for Pitts. You get a younger player at a position that you now have a plan for Kelsey to be his replacement. And you know, Kelsey and Pitts together for a couple years would be pretty fun to watch with the Chiefs, wouldn't it? And that would help compensate for, hey, I don't have to go get a top flight number one, because you could run more two tight end sets. If you notice in the Super Bowl win over the Niners, the Chiefs ran, they did a lot in the playoffs with more two tight end sets and even three. One wide receiver, three tight ends. Two receivers, two tight ends. One receiver, two tight ends, and then a back, like McKinnon, if in passing situations. So the Chiefs have had success with tight ends. So maybe that would appeal to the Chiefs. I'm open to it. Of course, there might be another trade out there to make even more sense. But if I'm the Falcons, I could easily say, we're giving up a top five talent, and we're giving up a guy that's 4 years younger, who's under team control for 2 years, and we're getting an all-pro corner who's 4 years older, but we're the ones that got to sign him to a long-term deal. So I could see the Falcons wanting some kind of draft pick thrown in there in order to trade for Snead because of the fact they have to give him the big deal. I could see that. And if that's the case, you know, Dusty, I think, says don't do it if you got to throw in a pick. I don't know. I'd have to look at a little bit more on throwing in the pick. But if it's a straight-up trade, I'm all for Veach. But I'm all for Veach no matter what he does. I'm in Veach. We trust. That's my club, and I'm sticking to it. The guy, he isn't hitting 1,000, but he's pretty close. He's made some great moves, good trades, free agent pickups. He's made some really good draft picks, especially in the later rounds. He hit on Rashee Rice, the second-round pick. People want to focus on Sky Moore. Hello, the most recent guy he drafted is Rashee Rice, and obviously he hit. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, okay, he's been serviceable, not quite a home run, obviously. But LeJarius Sneed was a home run, a fourth-round pick, you know. You can look at other draft picks that the Chiefs have had. Trent McDuffie trading up, getting him. He's a shutdown corner. Obviously, trading up, getting Mahomes, that's worked out somewhat decently, right? They've made some good free agent pickups with Justin Reed, and they picked up Drew Tranquil, Charles Omenihu. So there's – Donovan Smith was a decent pickup. Juwan Taylor, you know, he had some issues. They're paying him a lot of money. But in the playoffs, he was locked down at right tackle. The Chiefs have picked up a starting running back in the seventh round, Isaiah Pacheco. I don't want to know what else you want from Brett Veach other than to be perfect, and nobody's perfect. So I will trust him. If he thinks the Chiefs should keep Snead and sign a long-term deal, fine. If he thinks they should walk from Chris Jones, fine. If he thinks they should pay Chris Jones a lot of money and keep him, fine. If he thinks that they should trade Snead for Kyle Pitts, fine. If he thinks that they trade LeJarius Sneed for two draft picks, a second and a fifth, and they're going to go find their tight end in the future, fine. I'm on board with whatever Brett Veach wants to do. Why? Because he has three Lombardi trophies in the case at Arrowhead. He has three Super Bowl rings in the last, 4 years, right? 5 years, whatever it is. Back-to-back Super Bowls and going for a three-peat. If you question Brett Veach and what he does, then you're basically saying that you're smarter than him. And I'm going to tell you right now, a guy with three rings in the last 5 years and back-to-back Super Bowl championships, I think that guy's smarter than you and me.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.